listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great day. Hope you're having a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, except if you're in Florida or in the eastern coastline of this country, Dorian is about to hit, and it's going to be serious. And so I pray for all the people who are in the path of Dorian that they will be safe. It is going to be serious, you know. And when it was about to hit Puerto Rico, I tell you, Trump, I don't talk about Trump too often because it's a waste. But his stupidity and his ignorance and his buffoonery is beyond. I mean, should be no way in hell that that man should have been voted in and then let alone proceed that he could win another term. You know, I joked about it, true enough, but man, it is beyond anything. It is crazy. Anyway, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. On the front page, look for other programming. Hit on that and you'll see African Perspectives. Hit on that link and then it'll take you to previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program, once again, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After this program, on Monday and Wednesday, is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. The Black People Matrix, Monday and Wednesday with Franklin Jones. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Following that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, on Wednesdays also from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. And then if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, is today Friday? It is. Well, tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is going to be? That's right, brothers and sisters. It is going to be time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard tonight at 8 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. The Warren Ballantyne Show, Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. And if you're in the Atlanta area, right off of Georgia Highway 166 in the heart of the city is the Greenbrier Mall in the southwest portion of Atlanta. Let me put it that way. The Greenbrier Mall, and in the Greenbrier Mall, We Buy Black has a kiosk so you can directly get the things that you need. And believe me, they have an array of products at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahemba, Africa for the Africans. Brothers and sisters, check out AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He is going to have a trip coming up in November, just a few months away, going to South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town, November 22nd to December 2nd. And then he's also going to have a trip at the latter part of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, in Ghana, West Africa. Check out Brother Bomani Tahemba. And the number to call is 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to look at photos of previous tours, and the latest tour he had was back in May. It's on there. I've been there. I've been on the site. It's at facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to look at video, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta, on Ralph David Avenue, after the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, and the shrine has what you want. It is open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, and on Sunday from 1 to 3. And brothers and sisters, it is the Sirius Cultural Center at the Shrine. It has furniture, clothing, artwork, figurines, you name it, the Kwanzaa kits, the red, black, and Nazgas shoes, the red, black, and green shoes. It even has an African Holocaust Museum. The Shrine. They also have a class every Saturday tomorrow, Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. every Saturday. If you cannot make that, but you want information, you can contact the Shrine and you can get their multimedia library. Brothers and sisters, it is an extensive library, a cultural library. It has over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment right at your fingertips. You know, and I tell you, when I have it and I love it. A lot of good stuff, a lot of good movies, all kind of good stuff on there. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore is right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, figurines, T-shirts, all kinds of good stuff. And if you're looking for the book and they don't have it, believe me, they'll get it. They also have a bookstore, of course, in the Shrine, and the same applies there. And so, but the number to call is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, Medu Bookstore. And, of course, my good brother, Brother Kazimde, who, and where's Brother Kazimde at? Yeah. Oh, man. I just had that. You know, you ever had that thing and you just had it and now you lost it? I tell you, boy, sometimes the technology, you know? Well, Brother Kazimde Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, he's going to have a cultural arts festival on Saturday, September 28th. Saturday, September 20th, you can immerse yourself in the forms of art and culture. And it's from 12:30 p.m. to 8, Saturday, September 28th. And in the meantime, you can just check out the Black Dot Cultural Center, located 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. He has books. He has artwork, Nazgas shoes. He has it all. If he doesn't have the book that you want, once again, he'll get it for you. Because you know why? There is light in the black dot. Check him out. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast. Last night they were on from 9 until last night's Thursday night broadcast for Us Lifting Us. Ulu, Thursday night broadcast. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. The Us Lifting Us radio broadcast. Us Lifting Us is an economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We have pulled our monies together. We created Cafe Ulu, located in Atlanta at 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta. And we're open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Brothers and sisters, we have coffee. We have Cameroon Boyo, which is a delicious coffee, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopian, where coffee started, and other varieties of coffee from around the African, around the world, just not just African, around the world. And everything that is sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. It is truly Us Lifting Us, and it truly deserves to be supported. Brothers and sisters, go online to usliftingus.com, become a member, support it. Go online to cafeulu.com and buy some product, buy some coffee, buy some pounds of coffee. Yeah, do it. Another product we sell at Cafe Ulu is Ambrosia, created by Brother Novak Young. It's a delicious vitality drink that is made with alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll, as well as hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. Delicious vitality drink from my good brother, Brother Novak Young. Akabin Institute. They're going to be having a conference. I think it's when as soon as I get back from out of town, the 10th. I'm leaving today, so next week I won't have any live broadcast, but Brother Kwaku will handle all of that, as he often does. Can't say enough about how much I appreciate Brother Kwaku and how he helps out with the programs. And so I'm going to find this piece. Sometimes, you know, you do stuff and you be like, man, where is that at? It's right here. Occupant Institute, if you're going to contribute, and I hope that you will, make your check out to Occupant Institute. You can mail it to P.O. Box 10786, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you're going to do Cash App or PayPal, put in $YAAM, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and send your contribution into the to help support the school. There's going to be a third annual African Warrior Men's Day celebration. Mwali K. Bomanti Baruti, Baba Baruti, will lecture on manhood, warriorhood, and character. Follow with a question and answer, and that is going to be Tuesday, September 10th from 7 to 10 at Akabin, and a donation of $10, $5 for the young men. And you can contact Yah or Brother Baruti at 404-753-7237. 404-753-7237. These are men, but of course, their sisters, they got their own lecture series too. And Sister Yah is going to do that on the same day, same time. So, and then there's going to be, here's a class that you can register online. The class begins September 18th on To Educate a People, a 5-week online course taught by Baba Baruti. And Sister Yah has a sister circle, and they meet quarterly, and the African womanhood discussion in there. The next one is Sunday, October 27th. So, Sister Gabby, Gabrielle Aurelia in Haiti. She's in the northeast portion of Haiti, and she deserves to be supported. I'm asking you to go online to check it out. Just don't take my word for it. Check it out and see the excellent work that she is doing with young men, and particularly our children, and with education and different types of ways so they can sustain themselves. Sonjay-Hayiti, SONJAYITI.org. Sonjay-Hayiti. Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund is part of the Black Talk Radio Network, which we are a part of, which is the largest and most number one Black Talk Radio podcast in the nation. Number one. And we want to keep it that way. We want to strengthen it. We want to help support Brother Scotty Reed. Black Talk Radio Network Project 2019 Media Fund. Go online to blacktalkradionetwork.com. And when you get on that front page, you don't have to go nowhere else. Just scroll down, and on the right side, you'll see the Black Talk Radio Network Project 2019 Media Fund. Click on the donation. Make a contribution to the Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund. And Ye Say Sim, a revolutionary, daily revolutionary thought. And Ye Say Sim. Yesterday, I'm going to read just the two. I'll save the other ones when I get back. You know, I tell you, there are some gems in here that really are. August 29th, by elders here and elsewhere, I'm referring to those who deserve the title. I was taught to be polite to all old people, and I am. But my respect is to be reserved for those elders who have a life's record of fighting for their people. Ashe. I call them esteemed elders. Esteemed elders. This was written by Brother Mawani Moon. Mani Baruti, Baba Baruti. Age is supposed to bring wisdom, a greater working knowledge of one's work. Age should assist warriorhood not to be a barrier to fulfillment. Baba Hannibal Afrique. Oh, man, what a beautiful man. God rest his soul. Great elder, great ancestor. Baba Hannibal Afrique. Baba Hannibal Afrique is a prime example of one whose age is an asset to us because his life exhibits the culmination, experience in warring and giving vision to the rest of us, unknown to those oblivious to our struggle for self-definition and self-determination. Baba Hannibal has done all the ancestors could ask for of a warrior for our way. They could not have asked for a better, more determination builder. We need more loving elders in Jignox. Jignak is plural for those who, you know, the word mentor should not be used. We should not ever use the word mentor. We should use our words mentor if you understand the history and understand the story was a pedophile. So we don't want to use mentor or mentoring. We need to use Jignak, a Jignak, okay, who do not aspire to retirement, but who know being a warrior is a calling, and it's not a hobby. Affirm, I aspire to life of ever-increasing warring wisdom. Affirm, I aspire to a life of ever-increasing warring wisdom. August 30th. White men have ruled us for a long time. To some, it seems like one of the physical laws of nature. Damn. Clarence Mumford. And because of this time-worn confusion, we seek salvation beyond what we consider to be our individual and collective possibilities. But no age of Aquarius will save us from an age of demonic devastation by a people acting in and on this physical plane who need passive, self-sedated sheep in order to remake the world in their new or old image. Without our combined one-eye-open earthly efforts, we will find that the kind of false peace realized through misguided individual prayer and meditation becomes our living death. Once the Europeans' mission of monocultural domination under the disguise of benign multiculturalism is fulfilled, all the prayer and meditation in the world will not protect individuals born again into spirit from captivity. People can remain as captives individually. There is no universal time limit. There is no way of measuring the duration of the pendulum swing from Eset to Ma'at for any given people or institution. Only time will tell. And this time, Europeans will not make the same mistake as before. Ages, Aquarius, and others only open the way for possibility. They only set the stage for what can be done if we recognize the need for change in a particular direction on a spiritual and physical planes. They do not manipulate possibilities. These cosmic circles do not take us out of the human reality. They do not force or ensure change. They only facilitate this possibility. What he's saying there, bump that. It is our responsibility to get us up out of this mess. Firmly, I affirm I am in full possession of my African sanity. Affirm I am in full possession of my African sanity. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thoughts. I'm going to talk today. I'm on my way to Milwaukee, and I'm going to talk today with a dear friend of mine who me and him have worked together. Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters will have its 40th anniversary next week, Saturday. 40 years, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. On the phone with me today is a former president of the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters, as I am, and that is Brother Everett Crowcroft. Brother Everett, good morning. How you doing, man?
Good morning, brother.
How are things shaping up for the 40th anniversary?
We're getting our last preparations together, and it's going to be fabulous. Everyone is stepping up and becoming involved in the process, and it should go off without a hitch.
Outstanding. I know that it didn't start. It didn't start like that.
in almost every organization, there's about 10% of people who do all of the work,
yeah,
all the heavy lifting,
yeah,
but we still need the financial and spiritual moral support of the rest of the group.
That's right.
To keep us, you know, moving in the right direction. So everybody has a role, and like in sports, when one goes down, next man up or next woman up.
That's right. Next person up. Next person up.
So how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling fine, dear brother. I'm doing well, you know.
Okay. I always want to check black men, you know, how they're feeling health-wise and mentally and physically, because it's a lot of pressure on the brother out here. It is.
Well, you know, I reflect on the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters, the organization that I was involved in since its inception, and very proud of the organization and our accomplishments and the things that we were able to do, and especially for you and under your leadership, man, and all of them. And I could go down the line of the brothers. Because, you know, when we first started, we knew when we started coming on the Milwaukee Fire Department that we had to do something collectively to maintain, because we knew affirmative action wasn't going to last forever. And then, of course, it didn't. You know, but we had to maintain and the possibilities of more of us coming on the job to reflect the city we serve. You know, in fact, just saying that, I venture to say, what is the percent? Even though when we came on the job, the department was 1,100 man department, and today it's 800. So that's 3,000 people through attrition. They never really laid anybody off, but. They just started closing. In fact, there's some firehouses that are closed. Is that correct?
There's maybe one or two that are closed.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're doing is they're decommissioning fire trucks.
Okay.
So essentially, they're not closing the houses in people's neighborhoods, but they're taking apparatuses away. So where we used to have 16 ladder trucks, we had 8. And we have 5 people on a ladder truck. Now we only have 4.
So there were 16 ladder trucks. Now there's only 8. They cut it in half.
Right.
Yeah.
It's down to 8. And there's a lot of wear and tear on equipment.
Yeah.
On firefighters, we're taking twice as many guns as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing more with less.
Yep. Doing more with less. That seems to be the model across the country. to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. And so,
but the hiring, I was just going to, when you mentioned, we had 1,000 person fire force. Now we're going to have 800, and it's still only 80, about 80 African American brothers and sisters on the Milwaukee Fire Department. It's about 10%, but we comprise 40 to 45% of the city's population, and of that 800 that are on the fire department, 40% of them don't live in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And on the police department, 60% don't live in the city. So where I argue with them all the time is that is the care, you know, standard of care. Are they given the same standard of care that they would give if they were a part of the city?
Right. So now there are some firefighters on the Milwaukee Fire Department that do not live in the cities. I know that they had a residency rule, which I am and always have been in support of. And many other cities have been in support of, because they recognize we're paying these people, but these people are taking this money outside of the city and spending it elsewhere, tax dollars and so forth elsewhere. And I know that when I first came on the fire department, the union desperately wanted to get rid of get rid of that, because they did not want to live in the city. They didn't want residency. They tried so many times until finally they got a governor, an idiot, who made it happen. And so now we
And so now
there's a number of firefighters that do live outside of the city.
Yes, sir.
Wow, I knew it. 40%.
So that's
how
like,
much?
300.
Wow.
800.
Wow. Yeah. So I mean, once they knew that could happen. You know, they, because that just was only been what, 4, 5, 6 years that it happened, right?
Yeah, yeah, about that.
Yeah, because I know it wasn't that way, and I've been here in Atlanta now for 5 years, and I knew it was just trying to happen at the time that I left, and I was, you know, because being a member of a national organization, of which, of course, the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, they're going to celebrate their 50th anniversary next year in Hartford, Connecticut. And I know you'll be there, and I know I'll be there, because that's a big celebration, you know. But we've always talked about how important residency was, because we recognize in these cities it's predominantly us. And we wanted to make sure that, you know, that we affected the fire department in a positive way. You know, with jobs and so forth, but man, you know.
But even that being said, just for African American population in the city of Milwaukee, so they can see people that look like them and see that these positions are attainable and they're family sustaining jobs that they can have as well. Now we do have the residency points, which is 5 points. And we got that, whereas it used to be military, you get 20 points. Now it's residency, 5 points, military, 3 points.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so oh, wow.
Now we're getting a better pool of African-Americans, but we're getting quite a few. But our issue now is being able to get them through the assessment centers, through the oral exam, written exam, and the physical exam. Because a lot of them, they don't know the how hard it is to become a firefighter and the demands on your body and your mind and your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to come in with the right spirit too as
right.
ministry and helping others. So, but it's to the point where we can make a difference, especially if we can get the Fire and Police Commission to recognize banding as a option, where police chief is a, or fire chief and police chief are able to, you have 100 candidates and you choose the candidates off the list to reflect the city's population. They're all qualified. So if you have 100 qualified people and it's 40% African-American, you take 40% of that list will be African-American coming into the class.
I'm definitely in favor of it.
I'm
definitely in favor of it. Anything that can make an impact, because today, American Africans in the city of Milwaukee make up almost 40 to 45% of the city's population. And when you put into that mix, the Latinos or Hispanics, indigenous people, Asians, we're well over 50% of the city of Milwaukee's population. Caucasians now are in a minority, but yet we only are 10%. We're less than 10% of the fire department.
And police.
And police too?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I know you should know because you're on the Fire and Police Commission, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing battle.
Yeah.
You know, the thing now is that nationwide, they're getting rid of African Americans with the psych evaluation because there's no appeal. So in Milwaukee, we're developing an appeal process for psych eval, which was to get rid of people who had suicidal and homicidal tendencies and didn't work well in distress, which most times don't look like us. And it's becoming what we ask for is being used against us, pretty much.
Mm.
So and it's, they're asking culturally biased questions in the psyche eval,
right?
And they're weeding us out, and a lot of the candidates are like in the top 50, and they're getting weeded out in the process of the psyche eval.
You know, at one time in the morning, I left Engine 27 located on the east side of Milwaukee, and I'm driving west on Locust Street, and of course you pass a number of firehouses, Engine 30, Engine 13, and so forth. And on my way home, the fire truck is outside, the engine's outside, it's being watched. You see all these Caucasians. I saw about three sanitation trucks. We were on those trucks, but we were not on the fire engine. In my mind, damn, we could be the garbage man, but we can't be the firefighter.
Right.
You know?
What year was that?
Oh, that was probably 03.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, two, you know. Yeah.
Pretty recent.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been gone since 06.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so that was quite a while ago. And you know, I've been living here since, like I said, the last 5 years. And so some change has been made. But and I know that you and Chief Parrish and all the others are in that fight. And I know you're retired, but you're still in that fight because a lot of people retire like I done did mine. I'm gone. You know.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it's always been a ministry to me, and I just know that just from experience that with Black folks, only we can actually communicate with us best, you know, and so we need to have that representation on the fire and police departments, because if you don't want police officers, you know, using implicit bias.
Mm-hmm.
Then we need to be in those seats.
Right.
And the same thing, if you want the proper care for your community, you need to be in those seats.
Right.
So we need to recruit people to become, you know, firefighters and police officers from our community.
And to prepare them for the rigors of the testing process, like we have done historically, because just like you said, there's some things that they, you know, must need in order to, you know, not just to be physically fit, because many of us are. You know, but also too, they still issues of drugs, you know, and other things that your credit, you know. So, to be an ideal candidate, you must make sure that you have all those things in check. So, when you fill an application out and you're sincere, the Milwaukee Brotherhood has historically helped brothers and sisters with the testing process, the written test, the physical agility test. You know, the oral examination. See, we've always done that, but you, as the candidate, must make sure you do your end to make sure that you're going to be a viable candidate by making sure that, you know, all the other ancillary things that could keep you from being hired as a Milwaukee firefighter. And I'm saying this to fire departments across this country, wherever it is, because it's pretty much the same thing. Fire departments are, you know, public works jobs. And we've always maintained that those jobs should reflect the city they serve. But that's not historically the case, because the fire department has historically been the most racist occupation, you know, that there is. In fact, when we had our convention, National Convention in Los Angeles, we had a person from the Justice Department, and he stated that there are, and at that time, this is years ago, and I can imagine it's still that same way, there are still more lawsuits against fire departments than any other occupation because of how they maneuver the test. And of course, the working arrangements. I mean, I just saw recently the same situation that happened to you. You know, I think it was out east. Somebody hung a noose, you know, like they did you, hung a noose in a locker, you know, today, you know. So, I mean, the thing is this, the people we keep hoping will change the mindset. But as you can see, especially with the election of Trump, the mindset is always there, and now it's emboldened, you know. Because I remember, you know, all the time, the cast, remember we worked at 39, they watched Fox News every damn day.
Every day. Yeah. Propaganda.
Yeah. You know, every day.
But I mean, if you watch one thing, if you're only getting your source of information from one source,
yeah,
that's, you're going to be brainwashed.
Exactly.
It's like, you don't have open mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't question anything. They don't. And another thing is that they don't read.
Right.
A lot of people, firefighters are notorious for not reading. The only thing they read is like the text for EMT and you know, their job.
Right.
You know, job. So that would be it in their certifications and whatnot. Other than that, they're not really up on the news. They listen to the news and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
From my observation.
Yeah. But, no, they're not. On a whole,
Milwaukee Brothers Firefighters, we're pretty much, you know, the primary test preparation organization for the fire department, and we service the most needy communities.
Right,
that's what we do, you know, and we try to build up our community, and at the same time, building up tax base in the city.
Right,
because we don't mind living around each other. You know, we're not running. They're running,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the majority of the people who our services are helping are people of color,
mm-hmm.
the global majority.
Right.
So,
because I know the work that you guys have done, that we have done in terms of preparation, it has been open. We've had Caucasians come through there.
It is open.
We'll
help anyone.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Because
anyone that has a desire. Matter of fact, anybody, you don't have to be black to be in our organization. You just got to believe in and adhere to our goals and aims. You know, NAACP ain't all black. You know, we're not, you know, we're right. We're down with right and equality and justice. You know, so if you have that same mindset, then, yeah, you can be a member, but you got to be vetted.
Right.
You know, another member would have to bring you in. So it's kind of like a fraternity.
Exactly. That's what it is. It's like a fraternal organization. And I remember
Because, you know, like Coach V.
Right.
He's a member.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, me and Coach V.
And White Chocolate.
Yeah. You know. But the fact is that we knew that there were certain individuals who tried to get our organization, and we knew their mindset.
Right.
Because unfortunately, the predominant European Caucasian white mindset is not inclusive. It's not about sharing. It is, you know, selfish. It is greedy.
Right, right.
You know,
sharing the resources.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And so to me, that fight, you know, that we've waged, to sometimes successful, sometimes not, but it is continuous. And I know that the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters, even though we're going to celebrate 40 years of us, you know, doing what we have to do, you know, we'll continue to do it because it is necessary, vitally necessary, because we want the children of Milwaukee, particularly our children, to know that this position is yours as well as anybody else. You can aspire to be a firefighter, male or female.
You can be done.
Yep, male or female. I know that Sister Sharon, she's a battalion chief now, huh? Sharon Peterfor.
And she's also the vice president of Brotherhood now.
Is she? She's the vice president? Yeah. Okay, who's
and
the...
Our president is Anthony Lewis.
Hey, Lou.
Shout out if he's listening.
Hey, Lou.
He's doing a great job. He's organizing and getting more young people and increasing membership.
Outstanding.
And letting them, people know that in the next 5 years, there could only be 50 African Americans on the Milwaukee Fire Department, and they're young, and they're going to be fighting the same fight that we fought,
which is ridiculous.
When you said "Make America Great Again," no,
exactly. Yep, make America right white again, and you
just
know,
like I was telling you about the whole psyche veil.
Mm-hmm.
If they find that to be biased hiring practices, you know, we'll be right back with another consent decree.
Exactly. I hope so. I hope so. Because, I mean, I know we battled for many years. And I remember as the organization was starting, and I mean, I could say I go back, you know, from its inception when Ike Hatton, Al Manns, you know, God rest his soul, Mike Webster, Larry Greener, and, of course, the then president, Brother Sherman Moore, went to Chicago.
Right.
They went to Chicago in the spring, and we became an organization. We've tried previously, you know, back and forth, but we finally became an organization. We were the Milwaukee County Association of Black Professional Firefighters, and unfortunately had some internal stuff happening. But I remember meeting at Al's house and your brother, Bill, myself, and a few other cats, Vesta Russell, a lot of cats, and some of the brothers made their transition, and we're going to honor them. We're going to honor them on the 40th anniversary. We're going to say their names because so many that are gone have been instrumental in helping the organization to be the success that it became. And truly, you have, you know, because you really have put us on the map.
Too, man. You're president of the whole international, man.
No.
Milwaukee on the map.
Yeah.
The North Central was starting to pop then.
That's right. You're right. It sure was. You know.
We're really, really progressive region.
Yeah.
And we're Milwaukee's always been on the cutting edge of progress as far as recruitment, retention, and rank
promotion.
Advancement
right.
amongst the brothers and sisters that we have. But I just want to let you know that I was doing some research last night, and that consent decree in 1974, they actually have updated it, you know, because the NAACP, they said that they were fighting on behalf of the black firefighters, and then they upgraded it to the Milwaukee Brother of Firefighters.
Outstanding. So there you go. So go ahead.
Yeah.
The fight continues. So, the battle always, it's always constant, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
I just want to give a shout out to the NAACP because a lot of times they don't get the recognition that they deserve. No.
Yeah. But in that instance, I remember very well. And, when I found out that a consent decree had been initiated, I found out they were testing in Brother Doss Bender, one of our elders.
Right.
Brother Doss was a president of the ACP, and he helped. In that effort, and they had classes and so forth. And, you know, so whatever we have to do to impact the fire service once again with more brothers and sisters coming on the job, that's what we're going to have to do. Because I know they're not going to go back to the numbers that they had previously. It's always, you know, downsizing and combining departments and so forth. You know, there are all kinds of other things they can do. But because tax dollars pay for that service. And if the majority of the people in the city are American Africans and their tax dollars are paying for that service, they should demand to the mayor, to the common council, to the fire and police commission, to the chief, the fire and police departments, that department reflect the city it serves. And then it's incumbent upon us as organization to prepare young men and young women to access that position.
That's right. Amen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just like I was mentioning earlier, like Madison, Wisconsin, their fire department, they have the banding rule.
They do. Okay.
Yeah, they can pull off. That's why they have the most diverse fire department in America.
Yeah. They have,
it reflects
men, women.
City that it serves, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Transgender.
Yeah.
LGBT, everything.
They have everything.
And it should be that way.
Yeah.
Because they're part of our population. You know, everyone comprises that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we're working on it. We're going to try to make it right. Like I said, but in the meantime, we just, you know, recruit, prepare young men and women to become firefighters. Yeah. And that's the best we can do is have them prepared so that they're, when that opportunity arises, they're ready for it.
Well, I'm going to thank you, my brother, and for all that you have done and many years that me and you have worked together. For all those many years, it's been a pleasure working with you, man. I tell you, we had fun, didn't we, man?
Oh, man, always an inspiration and always a busted gut.
Yeah.
Because we had fun while we worked.
We did.
It was a joy coming to work.
Yeah, it really was, man. We had good crews. You were a truck boss. I was the engine boss. We had good crews. Mm-hmm. Cats did their work at the engine house. Did their work at the scene. Man, it was a pleasure, man, those last 15 years.
What was so beautiful is that we had a majority African-American, American-African house.
That's right.
And they understood that we had to be on top of our game.
Right.
And most professional.
Exactly.
And it's like in everything. We always have to be, you know, twice as good to get just as much. If you want more, that'd be three times as good.
That's
I
right.
That to my kids, you know, it's that way. Is it fair? No, but it's going to make you better.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So this is going to get cracking.
Yep. And so, you know, in the early onset of the organization, we also said that not only we're trying to get brothers and sisters on the job, but we also understand that we're as it says in our preamble, we're the vanguard of our community. And so we did a lot of things in the community, working with other organizations, other entities to help them. You know, we've been a resource. So, I mean, you know, what you and all the other presidents, myself included, have done over the years in these fights to, you know, to help our community has been tremendous. And I know that will continue. But we're going to celebrate the 40 years of us.
Oh, no doubt. And we can't leave out educating others that don't look like us about our culture, and also striving for racial harmony in the fire service. Because even to this day, nationally, there's only 5% African-American or black firefighters in the country.
Exactly.
5%.
5%. Exactly. Like I said, it is the most racist occupation that it is, you know, because of its unique
white male dominated.
Yeah. Because of its unique working arrangements. You know, Dr. Carl Holmes passed a few years ago.
Right.
And, you know, his training program, Executive Development Institute, what many of our brothers and sisters have gone into, has truly made an impact on a promotional level. There are many men and women who become chiefs of department. You know, I mean, Mark Sain was the assistant chief. He came through EDI. Jerry Dill, there's so many, I can name many of them. Orlando Rice, all of them came through that process.
Mike Wright.
Mm-hm. But the problem, of course, is coming on the job. That's the real issue. We dealt with the promotional piece. So we had cats in promotional in positions, but we're still not coming on the job. It's just, as you said, less than 5% of us nationally and less than 10% in Milwaukee. So any city, in fact, I was just talking to my good friend, Brother Jim Wimbush in Chicago. It's that way in Chicago. You know, we have a caller. Let's take a call, brother. Can you stick around with me a little bit more?
Thing.
Okay,
yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Yes, sir.
424. Good afternoon. Good morning. Or good afternoon. Good morning. 424. Hello, 424. Okay, I'm going to let you stay on the line and you can listen. So, yeah, you know, I'm so thankful, you know, that I found out that they were hiring. I'm so thankful that I went through the testing process and became a firefighter. Thankful that I had a career and truly thankful that I have a pension. You know,
no doubt.
You know, but
yeah, go ahead.
No, but I was saying but when I look back on it and then some of the, you know, ups and downs, you know, because I don't look at it for me individually. If I did that, I wouldn't have, I could care less. But I look at it
from
the perspective of us on the fire department, us within the fire service across the country, and truly us as a people in the communities that we live. And I'm thankful that we developed an organization that tried to work with others to address those issues as well. Because I'm going to read after, you know, I know you got to get back, what happened in Milwaukee with the heavy job losses since the 70s. Jackson's piece. Reggie Jackson, who was a docent at the America's Black Holocaust Museum.
Yep. Good brother.
Yeah,
good
very.
Brother.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so I'm going to read that particular piece. A little focus on Milwaukee today. You know that I'm going to do, and hopefully some people will listen and call
but
in.
But yeah, I just wanted to just to add is like my whole philosophy on firefighting because 90% of firefighting is emergency medical. And I just want to let people know that in my perspective, it's always been a ministry, and we're there to help people on their worst days and help let God work through us to help save lives.
Ashe.
So the Supreme Being gets, to me, gets the last kudos and gets the thanks and the praise.
No doubt.
Yeah, because we're just as bad. Our ancestors, they're honest, man. You know, people got to get in contact, you know, with their inner self and just their spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, especially firefighters and police officers as well. I think that people who don't look at it that way as to serve, then if they look at it as a job, they're not going to do a good job. But if you're there to genuinely serve people, you're going to do the right thing every time.
Yeah. Well, listen, speaking of the police department, the League of Martin has been revived. My nephew, brother Troy Johnson, has revived.
Troy Johnson, man.
Yeah. So I'm happy, man.
He's actually going to come and give a deposition or testify on one of the you need to have him on, man, and let him tell the story of how the first time that he applied for the police department.
Okay.
He was disqualified on the first eval.
Mm. Yeah, now he's I'm gonna do that because he has done some good work. In fact, when I was in town about a few years ago, you know, when they're talking about let's get the League of Martin back going because there's still a lot of issues within the police department that affects our community. And of course, let's work with the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters. And they've done that. So I'm glad that you guys are collaborating and making some things happen. Brother Everett.
Oh, no doubt.
I appreciate you.
Outside of Milwaukee.
Yeah, I appreciate you giving me this time, man. I know that you listen periodically, man, you know. And I
listen periodically. I listen every day. I don't listen to nobody every day except my wife.
you better.
You know that's right. It's good advice to everyone.
That's right.
You don't want to wake
a happy wife, a happy life, you know.
I know. Happy house, brother.
Yeah. But listen, man, I'm going to look forward to seeing you very soon in the next few days. And of course, next week, Saturday, it's going to be at the Harley-Davidson Center. Any other highlights that you're going to talk about very, very quickly before you got to go about the anniversary?
We will be giving our memoriam to all the brothers that served and passed before us. It's a tradition that we do very solemnly. And we have an excellent dance after that. Because, you know, there's a time to mourn, there's a time to dance.
That's right. It's time to party. That's right. It's time to party. Right on.
Yes, sir. We're going to celebrate.
Okay.
But we're going to reflect as well.
Ashe. Yeah. All right, Brother Everett Crowcroft, former president of the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters, and presently is a member of the Fire and Police Commission. And so he's done outstanding work. Hey, man, I just want to say publicly, in your tenure, for us getting that building at the time that we had it, was probably the most proud I've ever been of us as an organization and the work that we continue to do. So I appreciate you, man.
We're going to take it to the next level again.
I know that's right. Peace to you, my brother.
Ain't no stopping us now.
That's right.
Peace.
Peace.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
That was my good brother, Brother Everett Crowcroft, the former president of the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters. Me and him have worked together for many years. I tell you, have a lot of love and respect for Everett and his brother Bill and all of us, and I look forward to seeing them. Tonight I'm going to be in Milwaukee. I'm going to go to Rufus King, our high school reunion. I didn't know that because I was coming in town for the 40th anniversary of the Brotherhood, but there's a school reunion, so I'm looking forward to that too. Going to have some fun. So, brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Milwaukee some more and what happened to Milwaukee. So if you're familiar, if you want to join in, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And we're coming to be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. But now I see what habit is, the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair. Cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more. Cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kiss. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around. You just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop, apply from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through, 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The little summertime for you, Summer Madness from Kool & the Gang, and of course, Summertime from Will Smith. I'm going to Milwaukee, and of course, it has always been a situation where when Labor Day comes, that's the end of summer. So I'm playing that for brothers and sisters. No, it is the end of summer. And that's pretty much that way for people in the northern region, you know. But for here, it's still hot, you know. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. My program, 11 to 1 each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. followed by on Mondays and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix, where wrote Brother Franklin Jones on Monday and Wednesdays from 1 to 3. And then other programs on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's tonight at 8 p.m. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., it's once again Time for an Awakening. And every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Warren Valentine Show. Monday through Friday right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. And as on Friday, I do every Friday, I announce my good brother, Brother Yusuf Muhammad's program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. And believe me, for those in the Southeast, you definitely need to listen. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, because Dorian ain't going to be playing. And that program is from 4 to 6 today. And the number to call is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. We're going to finish a conversation about Milwaukee, an article that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Heavy job losses since the 1970s hit Milwaukee's American African community the hardest, and here's why. It was written by John Schmidt for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but it's quoting a good brother of mine, and that's Brother Reggie Jackson, who is the docent or the main griot at the America's Black Holocaust Museum, which has been rebuilt, and I hope that is functioning. If it is, when I get to Milwaukee, I'll just go through there again. Among the nation's big post-industrial cities, what is it that makes Milwaukee so extreme? Year after year and year out, the city that will host next year, Milwaukee is going to host a Democratic National Convention, is amongst the nation's most impoverished, incarcerated, and racially segregated urban centers. The reason, according to one highly credentialed historian, is that Milwaukee endured a perfect storm of economic upheaval over the last five decades. That storm began with the extremes of the city's boom and bust, noted Reggie Jackson, who serves as a griot or head scholar at the Milwaukee at America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. Even as Milwaukee absorbed an industrial collapse that's unprecedented among big cities, Jackson argues the region's racially discriminatory housing bans kept people locked in place. To this day, Milwaukee remains the most racially segregated metro region in the nation, as measured by U.S. Census data. And this divisive millennia of poverty, racism, is so pervasive and traumatizing that it has caught the attention of the rest of the nation, and it generates headlines like this one from the National Public Radio in 2015. Why is Milwaukee so bad for Black people? We're talking about this idea of this perfect storm that hit Milwaukee with the losses of manufacturing jobs, the growth of poverty, and all of the negative components that come along with poverty, and the role that racism has played in that. Jackson explains there's a video in from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. In that video, Jackson aims to punctuate few myths, notably that the social dysfunction in Milwaukee's American African community stems from some sort of stereotypical laziness. In fact, he says the promise of employment is what drew so many Southern American African families to migrate to Milwaukee in the first place. One of the things that many people in Milwaukee aren't familiar with is how thriving this place used to be, Jackson says, echoing other economists and historians. In a little more than a single generation, Milwaukee morphed from the best city in the nation for American African laborers, replete with a cornucopia of family-supporting manufacturing jobs, to the present-day cliché as one of the worst cities for American African people. Based on a multiple interviews with Jackson and more than a decade of Journal Sentinel reporting, here's what you need to know about why that happened. Milwaukee was once the nation's best city for American African laborers. in the census of 1970, 43% of Milwaukee's American African community drew paychecks as industrial laborers, punch press operators, riveters, assembly line workers, forklift drivers, foundry workers, you name it. The work was unglamorous, but it paid the mortgage and sometimes even provided tuition for scholarships for college as well. Only Detroit, with 39% of its American African population in that year, came close to Milwaukee's blue-collar bonanza for American African workers. Milwaukee was a phenomenal job machine, and U.S. Census data showed. We used to be the machine shop of the world. That's how Milwaukee was known, Reggie Jackson said. There were jobs that brought American African people to Milwaukee. There's a good picture near of Bronzeville located on Walnut Street. Walnut Street was the main street at the time for American African people in the 50s. And, of course, I remember little of that, but I saw the remnants of that, you know. And so by the 1950s and 60s, the word was out across the South for working people. Milwaukee was a promised land. People who wanted to leave Mississippi and Arkansas and Georgia came to Milwaukee to find quality work. Like the Italians, Irish, and Poles who arrived decades before, the city's American African newcomers often ended up with a repetitive and dangerous work. In return, they got the best paycheck they ever had and they ever seen. American Africans by the thousands, many of them just out of the army, worked their way towards the middle class in the decades that followed World War II. They held jobs at blue chip stalwarts such as Alice Chalmers, Briggs & Stratton, Slitz Brewing Company, A.O. Smith, Kearney & Trucker, American Motors. And many lived in Bronzeville, which became Milwaukee's jazz-driven version of Harlem. The North Side enclave existed, if only briefly, as a self-sufficient community. American African-owned businesses included Regal Theater, along with restaurants, record stores, jewelers, tailors, cleaners, law firms, hotels, barbershops, and beauty parlors. But the hottest and most lucrative venues were jazz clubs. Music lovers, white and black, Caucasian and American African, congregated at places with names like the Moon Glow, the Savoy, the Flame, the Congo Room, the Repelican Room, and the Bamboo Room. In the 8 million strong Great Migration, 8 million strong, and I know that my family was a part of the first wave of migration out of Georgia. We came out of Georgia. In fact, there's a highway, U.S. Highway 41, that starts from the south in Tampa, goes all the way almost into the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That was the conduit which our people used to travel straight north from Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. And we took that straight north. And my grandfather went to Milwaukee. Most of all of his other brothers and sisters, when they left, they went to Chicago. Because my mother was born in Milwaukee in 1926. The Great Migration of the last century, many Southern American African people fled segregationist South and the Jim Crow laws. What they encountered in Milwaukee, however, was systematic segregation of a different sort. Milwaukee homeowners and realtors enshrined their Caucasian-only homogeneity with property deeds that prohibited American African ownership, leasing, or occupation. At least 16 of the 18 Milwaukee County suburbs were racially restrictive covenants to exclude American African families, and that is the way today. If you go around, the majority of the American African people live in Milwaukee County. And even in Milwaukee County, there are suburbs that have very few of us. According to the research published by a nonprofit called the Metropolitan Integration Research Center, which combined property deeds across Milwaukee County. To this day, Jackson and others noted Milwaukee has poorly funded transit links, effectively isolating the suburbs from the city and the jobs from the job seekers. With the wholesale social exclusion came the rhetoric of racism, which Jackson sums up like this. Many people don't want to work. You know people. They are lazy. Things of that nature. In the video, Jackson speaks on the grounds of the now defunct A.O. Smith work. once the city's largest employee. At its peak, the Northside campus of the factories covered 148 acres and employed 10,000 people, epitomizing the economic stability of the city's pre-global economy. A.O. Smith once welded the under they once welded the undercarriages of nearly every American-made passenger vehicle, making Milwaukee's factories indispensable to the economy of Detroit. A.O. Smith cited the auto business in the 1990s, and today its former industrial grounds are largely vacant. Like a ghost town. Milwaukee's abundance of low-skill opportunities provided both a blessing and a curse. Compared to other cities, the whiplash downsizing hit Milwaukee's American African workers with unprecedented force because they relied more on sweat and muscle than on American African workers in any other city. Started in the 1970s, gathering force since then, most of the industries that built Milwaukee's economy left town or went out of business. Milwaukee has never really reinvented itself, Jackson said, losing its economy identity along the way. According to the most recent U.S. Census, Milwaukee has the third highest share of its total population below the poverty line. 27% live below the poverty line. Nearly half of the city's American African children under the age of 18, 48% live below the poverty line. Milwaukee also leads all 100 of the nation's biggest metro areas in the index of concentrated poverty created by the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. And of course, Cleveland ain't doing too well either. The business and technology website 24/7 Wall Street, using a broad index of social education economic indicators, ranked Milwaukee as the worst big city for American African people. Only one town was worse than Milwaukee, but it's small, and that was Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Total metropolitan population of 170. Third worst on the list is Racine, Wisconsin. In 2014 study, in upward mobility in the 50th largest cities, Milwaukee was second worst behind Charlotte, North Carolina, which is surprising because a number of our people have moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, like they've moved here to Atlanta. Milwaukee showed lower rates of mobility than any developed country for which data can currently be available. The study was conducted by Rod Chetty, a Harvard University economist professor who grew up in Milwaukee area. Milwaukee has the highest rate of American African male incarceration among the 50 largest metro areas. 15%, almost 16% incarceration during the 2010 biennial census, according to the research from Harvard Opportunity Insights Policy and Research Institute. This disparity is influenced by many factors, including hyper-segregation, concentrated poverty, and concentrated unemployment, all of which already are extreme in Milwaukee, said Reggie Moore, director of the Office of Violence Prevention in the city's health department. Among Milwaukee's various extremes, the city's high rate of imprisonment defies simple explanations, cautions Jackson. Criminal justice practices, Wisconsin sentencing laws, the police profiling play a role. But Jackson also argued that imprisonment and unemployment created self-reinforcing dynamics of their own. Any myth like black laziness is black criminality. I'm a leave this article right there, and I got a guest or two, and I'm going to get that guest on. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Osh.
Hey, Brother Muhammad. How are you doing? Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, brother. excuse me, I have to call you after you get off the air and kind of give you an update. But I just want you've covered so much ground, man. I want to mention 94. You were talking about the Highway 41. The underground railroad of the sharecroppers.
Yep.
And the more elegant name, the Great Migration.
Right.
From, you know, Chicago, Milwaukee, all the way up to Lackawanna. That's the title of one of my favorite films.
Well, one of mine's too, brother. I love Lackawanna Blues. Love it.
Yeah. So it depicts the clearly. But I also want to mention, because sometimes you can be witness of something, and at the time you don't know what you're witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention, you were talking about the jobs, manufacturing jobs moving out of Milwaukee. I want to mention 94, 65, 24, 75.
Mm.
Back in the 70s, some brothers, some Muslim brothers in the nation under Elijah Muhammad moved to Milwaukee, and one of the brothers told me how he would travel around the country. And he told me about something called, he said, they call it, what you need to do is get you a driveway car.
Mm-hmm.
So you had these companies where
right.
from Milwaukee to Atlanta, and that was my favorite spot. I visited Atlanta and fell in love with it. And so I would get me a driveway car, and basically you put up $100. They give you a car full of gas. From the time that gas ran out, you had to provide the rest of the gas, but you could turn it over on E.
Okay.
Push it into the driveway. and then you get your $100 back.
Okay.
And so what I started recognizing is I was delivering cars, brand new vehicles, fleet vehicles, to A.O. Smith in Atlanta, North Atlanta.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It dawned on me a little bit, like, A.O. Smith in Atlanta? I ain't never seen no A.O. Smith in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
What that was the beginning of is before the jobs moved further south to Mexico, they moved to southern states. And when I first went to Atlanta, the friends of mine that I knew there that had moved from Milwaukee, Dakin Gentry, Sharan Graham, Cecilia Stanley, Whitfield Hardeman's older sister Cheryl Hardeman, they had a singing group called Brown Sugar.
Right.
So I fell in love with Atlanta the first time I went there. And 6 months later, I moved there with a wife, 5 kids, and no job. I just wanted to get out of Milwaukee.
I know that's right.
Got there, they told me this. They said, you know, Muhammad, you know Georgia is a right to work state.
Exactly.
And I was like, okay, what does that mean? And they, you know, sort of told me, well, you know, unions around here, we got unions down here, but, you know, the word union is a bastardized word. The people in the South, when they think of the Union, they think of the Civil War, the war against the Confederate South and the Union North. So just the name Union, not to mention, you know, the rights that unions back then used to fight for that in the South you didn't get. I belonged to a union when I worked for Meade to a container division in Atlanta. But, man, if you got fired, that union couldn't get you no job. Well, similar to how it is nationally now after Ronald Reagan busted.
Right, PATCO. He busted PATCO, the air traffic controller.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then and then had the damn airport named after him. That's why I never called D.C. National Reagan. Never.
Right.
Okay.
So this story of Milwaukee, the other thing is that I maybe it's in the article, I don't know if the British brother mentioned it, but the dagger that went into the heart of the African-American Negro colored community in Milwaukee, though, you know, we migrated colored Negro, black, African-American, was the 43 South, what they call 43 South Expressway.
Exactly.
It went to the heart of what was then in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s of the African-American community.
Exactly.
And I mean community. As bad a shape we might have been racially, ideologically, you know, in terms of segregation, because they used the segregation that existed back then by touting Milwaukee's, not as segregation, these ethnic communities.
Right.
But they were all around us.
Right.
Polish, German, Jewish.
The Italians. The Italians. Mm-hmm.
So that still, all them other communities, just recently, Oshie, you'll maybe see this when you're in Milwaukee. You know I've been buying my meat from the Kosher Butcher on 47th and Burleigh for probably close to 4 years.
Right.
They're closing.
Oh, they're closing?
That's the last Kosher Butcher, Hasidic Jewish Kosher Butcher left in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow. Well, I mean, because, you know, that's a huge community over there, Muhammad. You know, with a lot of Hasidic Jews and Jews up in that area.
Not as huge. Oshie, back in the day, there were probably 20 kosher markets in what we call the Sherman Park area.
Right.
Most of those have moved. They first moved east near the lake, and then they moved north to Whitefish Bay.
Right.
And so even though that kosher market supplied, and I don't want to get off our subject, but just, you know, it was significant of that kosher market being there, because when the recent so-called riot occurred, when that gay African-American policeman killed that young man in Sherman Park, and they burned stuff and, you know, set stuff on fire and so forth, the brother who owns the barbershop, Houdini, next door to the kosher market, him and his guys came and guarded their shop and the kosher market. So you had some, despite how far the Jewish people have migrated away from us, as Paul Mooney said, what happened to the Jewish people that, you know, helped out in the civil rights movement, that marched with us? They're white now. That's what happened to them. They're white. We don't mean nothing to them anymore.
That's right.
It ain't profitable to defend us in court now.
Right.
So many things have gone on, Oshie. And I'm in Milwaukee right now, and you headed here. And I will stand on this note. Milwaukee, and you feel this in a lot of places, probably not so much in Atlanta because of its large African-American population, but boy, this is the most, how can I say it, the lack of unity. And you have some successful Negroes in Milwaukee.
Yes, you do.
Car dealerships and huge properties, but they don't see themselves. That's why sometimes
right.
Just the us, we, our state.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many of these people that are successful, the gatekeepers,
that's what they are. Yeah.
They ain't interested in the rest of these. They don't even know most of these young people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with the industry gone, with the type of leadership or lack thereof here in Milwaukee, when I'm here, man, it's a different kind of feeling. Especially coming from Madison, where you got five Negroes and all of them think they're important, except I'm not one of them.
Well, it is the seat of state government, so.
You have some educated, mostly sisters.
Right.
Mostly educated.
Right, mostly
many
sisters.
Are turning to the other persuasion because, you know, the educated brothers are up there.
And marry Caucasian women. And marry pretty much...
Caucasian, Asian, Latino, Hispanic. It's the reverse of FUBU.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody but us.
That's
anybody
right.
That look like my... And I'm including one of the major gatekeepers, longest gatekeepers here in Milwaukee, Mogul, media Mogul. I've never seen him with a black person in Milwaukee except for Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Who used to own the Madison Times newspaper and
just
lost his job when the new governor came in. He was the secretary of DWD under Scott Walker. That's the only black person I've seen, this brother's son, who is a lawyer that we both know in Madison.
Okay.
Every time I've seen him in there, he was some Caucasian dude.
So we got a caller, Muhammad. We got a caller, Muhammad.
Go ahead, brother.
Caller 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, brother Oshie? How are you, my brother?
Hey, Jay, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Good.
So you going to be out next week, huh?
Yeah. I'll be in Bruce City, in Kill. I'll be in Kilwaukee. Yeah.
Because it ain't Bruce City no more unless you're talking about microbreweries.
That's right. That's for sure.
African Americans. There's one brewery left in the city of Milwaukee, major brewery, and I think either the South Africans who bought it at one time sold. I don't know who owns Miller now.
Right.
I don't know anybody that works at Miller anymore.
I hear me
and
either.
You know, the biggest thing they got in Milwaukee is the Milwaukee Bucks. Other than that, I don't think got anything for black folks. You know what I mean?
Well, I just read that.
It seems like that's the direction that it's going all around the country.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they're one of the biggest real estate owners in the city now.
Okay. But I tell you this, black people are truly being displaced out of this country, and we too damn dumb to know it. That's what really the problem is. Black people are being marginalized on every area within this country, and we too stupid to realize it. Think about this, Atlanta, where where both of y'all brothers are from. At one time, Atlanta was the black Mecca. Atlanta had control and power, and it was building more millionaires in this country than any place at any time. When Manny Jackson was the mayor, now look at Atlanta and what it represents when you talk to people about Atlanta. The first thing most cats that I talk to when they talk about Atlanta, they talk about monkey men and the overflow of these gay boys. You know what I'm saying? They don't talk about Russell's construction or anything like that. They don't talk about real empowerment. I mean, you know, we're not seeing what's being done to us, man. We're really not. We're not observing the transition of blacks having a piece of this country to the point to where we don't have a piece of nothing.
Oh, shoot.
Yes.
The brother is referring to something. Of course, Atlanta, the African-American community used to be around the AU Center in Atlanta.
Right.
Sparks, Morehouse, Morris Brown,
right.
Atlanta University. Those people have been displaced far northwest of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And in the industries where African-Americans used to live, go online on YouTube and look at a video called Displaced in the New South. And you will see where in the South, immigrants from south of the border, from across the water, have come in and replaced African-Americans in metropolitan Atlanta. In
mm-hmm.
fact, most of the poultry industry where African-Americans used to be prominent, most of that has been replaced by immigrants.
Exactly.
And the young African-Americans is not taking them sneakers and them sports outfits off and them grills off in their mouth. They're not doing that. That's their world now. They ain't thinking about going to work nowhere.
Hey, and you know something, brother? The thing that a lot of us don't understand why these other ethnic groups are able to do what they're doing, because they believe in something that we don't believe in, tribalism. They believe in tribalism. They don't give a damn about no other ethnic group, nobody else. They strictly about their own. They work collectively with one another to build up their own, to build community. We the only people that whenever we find any degree of success, we want to go be by the goddamn cracker. Oh, excuse me, by the Yoruba.
I'll give you another displacement. In America, in the 70s, up until the late 70s, between 75 and 80, the largest population of Sunni Muslims in America were African Americans. Now, African American Sunni Muslims everywhere across this country have been displaced by immigrants, Africans, Asians, Arabs, Caucasians from Turkey and the Caucasus Mountains. That is a serious displacement that most African Americans are watching, but they don't know how. They look around most of the communities, what brother was just talking about, and see who owns the businesses in our
right.
community.
Exactly.
I'm afraid with most of these businesses are owned by Palestinian, Jordanian, Arab, Asians from India, Pakistan, who don't live in our community, don't send their kids to school in our community, and they come here unified, tribally, or whatever, united on one thing. Target them Negroes from their hair to their toenails.
That's right.
That's it.
You know, Muhammad.
That's exactly what they do.
Muhammad, you know, when we went to Denver to the NAACP convention, when you were executive director and I was on the board in 1980. Something I will never forget.
No, you weren't just on the board. You were first vice president.
That's okay.
You were the first vice. You were a heartbeat away from president. I'm not trying to make a joke out of it, but
okay.
Go ahead. Make your point.
So I will never forget on the plenary floor, a brother from Philadelphia was literally in tears talking about the transition in his neighborhood for people having stores and so forth. And ironically, When we got back to Milwaukee, we had the Freedom Fund dinner upcoming, and I was selling advertisement. And Capital Foods, which was in my neighborhood where I lived at the time, they were Palestinians. And I asked them for...
Actually, Oshie, the first ones were from Iran.
They were Iranians?
They sold it to some Palestinians.
Okay.
But go ahead.
But yeah, you know, they wouldn't... They said, no, we're not going to do that. But yet, you know, they sold pork. They sold cigarettes to kids. You know, they had no...
Alcohol, lottery tickets.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I was naive. I thought, well, they're Muslim, they'll act and
oh, Oshie, let me give you an inside secret. They came, all of those Muslims that came over here after Lyndon Johnson signed or repealed some legislation that Ted Kennedy co-authored, repealing the Origins Act, that opened the door for people other than from Europe in the 70s, and they flooded in here. And so they came in first to go to school, but then they started sticking around. Now they don't talk about back home no more.
No.
Their kids are graduating from college.
Right.
And so, yeah, that particular history is kind of glossed over, unfortunately, but it is still very prevalent in Madison, Milwaukee. Almost every community you go into the country, you find
exactly. It is across the real estate and
businesses in our community.
And they have benefited off our community. They came here with the express purpose of taking advantage of our community. When the Caucasian, who I guess he didn't understand that Sikhs were not, you know, Arabs, but I guess he thought because they got a turban on, he bum rushes the temple in Oak Creek and he kills a couple of people or whatever. And then I looked at that. I'm like, man, that's beautiful. How did they do that? Well, how they did that is that they had a bunch of stores, the Dollywall, had a bunch of service stations and stores in our community. That's what facilitated their economic rise.
Dollywall, who is a former professor at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, he owned over 100 gas stations across the country. And he started bringing Sikhs from India, piling them up in the houses like Mexicans, and they worked with him. Some of them with Bradshaw start driving cab. Eventually, they get him a tag license for the thing, and because they own the Yellow Company cab company that we used to work for in Milwaukee, the Boynton Yellow mm-hmm. Cab Company.
Right.
So these people come here, and Oshie, I'll be honest with you, they used to come here with the idea of going back home. But listen, imagine if you came here and lived here for a while and you looked in our community and said, look at all that gold laying around on the ground and them people, pennies, they don't even pick up pennies.
Mm-hmm.
You can find pennies on the ground in the gas station. These kids now want my daughter.
I know. I picked up 4 pennies the other day. I was like, damn, really? I picked up 4 pennies the other day.
They came here to go to school, most of them, and even the Muslims, you're going back home. But after a while, they were like, going back home? For what? Have you tasted this pie here in America? And look at these black people. And the one thing you said earlier about laziness from the article, I agree with Paul Mooney. Not that I condone it. But look, if you had to work 400 years for free, you want to sit down somewhere too. But we weren't lazy. I told this lady from Columbia, said she got a law degree from Columbia, but she worked in the housekeeping at the library where I worked. I said, lady, when we came here from the South in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, we was more industrious than you can imagine.
That's right.
So don't be looking at these young people that were, you know, trying to cast dispersion on us, because let me educate you a little bit for what it's worth. But, you know, what can you say, man? You have to keep you know, you have to accentuate the positive as much as we can, is all I can say.
Well, then, you know, the reality is this, is that we have never been that. But unfortunately, what we always have been, unfortunately, is job seekers. We have been job seekers. And who we seek jobs from can't stand our ass. And that's a fact.
They don't
Jay?
Believe to come up to Madison and get a job.
They don't have no use for you.
Go ahead, Jay.
What purpose, in all honesty, do you really serve the white man? Well, seriously, let's be honest. What purpose do black people really serve the white man? You serve no purpose to him.
Not now. Hey, Jay, not now, because all the cotton has been picked. All the other stuff has been done. So we don't. And so now we serve them through, mass incarceration.
There you go. There you go.
We will soon be serving them or being served in the cannabis, because although this stuff is coming online and they're letting brothers out of prison and giving them, man, at the end of the day, we going to still end up consumers and other gas, food,
plastic,
clothes, everything else.
Just think about that. Think how deep that is. That here it is, you got a product that's been used to basically incarcerate a whole group of people. And here it is, now they make it legal for you to sell it. But they don't even allow you a position to be able to grow it. What did I tell you? But you want to do everything in your power to support the legalization of it and be a part of it, but you can't even be a part of it. See, that's what's fundamentally wrong with us. We allow people to basically do whatever the hell they want to do to us and get away with it, and we don't make them pay for it. We don't make them do nothing. We just accept it. Why would you even allow for the marijuana, the hemp industry to get to the point to where it is, and black people who suffered the most from it can't even be a part of it, and you just let it go through?
It's the new prohibition. It's history we've been on. We went through this with alcohol.
Exactly.
Who are the main people that caused the alcohol industry to explode during prohibition?
Us.
Was black people.
Was us.
Women didn't go in bars or drink publicly before prohibition, but once prohibition went into effect, they mostly started drinking at speakeasies in cities in New York and so forth. And so when, by the time they made it legal again, who owns it to this day?
They do.
It's crazy to the point to where, how are you not going to be in a position to participate in something, to benefit for something that has basically destroyed the lives of your people? And then you talk about, well, I want to be a part of it. It's funny, and I'll say this right quick. They got a woman and where I live at in New York who fights real, real hard for black people to be a part of the marijuana growth and ownership and all of that. And that's the same negress who would call the cops every time you turn around if somebody was smoking some weed or selling some weed near her place. And now she's the biggest advocate for it. But when it was...
She's got a sister in Milwaukee. And I've met her. She's got a sister. I'm speaking figuratively. When I came back to Milwaukee from Arizona in 2015... after I got this grave warning from OC, the Arizona is too hot and too white.
and I was right.
There was a Caucasian woman going at Gerald Jones, the owner of WNOC in Milwaukee Prairie, and she was coming saying, I'm trying to get you all to organize your own people to be ready for when this stuff becomes legal so you'll have a stake in it. But I've never seen anything material from them, because I think most of the African Americans is basically Michael McGee Jr., the former alderman. He has a CBD store.
Right.
And so these are the people in African Americans who probably come online and be able to sell this. But the same people that own the other stuff in our community gonna end up owning that too.
Yeah. Hey Jay, you got any last words, man? Because I'm about to go off. Hey Jay. All right, Muhammad, you got any last words, dear brother?
Well, all I can say is don't go to sleep.
Yeah.
Don't go to sleep, because something else is happening.
Exactly. Something's always happening, man. I appreciate it, man. I'll see you in a few hours, brother. I look forward to it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we got a school reunion that came upon us, man. And so me and you gonna kick it. All right, Brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum. All right, dear brother. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, please have a safe weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, Abivahodio means our victorious destiny. Abivahodio family, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace.